I'm talking with my good friend and colleague, the one and only Kelsey Nicole Nelson. And I couldn't think of anybody better to discuss this issue with, because right now we are seeing a tremendous historic surge in the popularity of women's sports, particularly as what we just saw with the women's Final Four. But there are still so many things around this. We are in the infancy, it seems, of what could either be the golden age of women's sports, but I also think there are some dangers as well that we're facing. Kelsey, first, let's just start with the pure euphoria that was around the sporting world in the aftermath of the women's Final Four. Unprecedented ratings, unprecedented interest. What was it like this season covering women's basketball and seeing it culminate with one of the greatest Final Fours we've ever seen?
You know, David, for me, it's surreal, you know, because I grew up in women's sports, played women's basketball, played women's volleyball, you know, went to games here in D.C., you know, watching the Mystics and, of course, University of Maryland, where I ended up going to. So all that to say, you know, I did my senior paper, David, on the growth of women's basketball, specifically in the WNBA. I did my graduate paper on a marketing plan for the WNBA. So I've cared about women's sports for so long. It's something I dedicated my education to, obviously now today it's a career. And so to now see it come to life, it was amazing. When you think about it peaking at 24 million. So for comparison, they said 95 million people watched the OJ chase, right? The White Bronco chase. Think about 24 million watching this game. I mean, it's incredible. And I think this is the moment that we knew women's sports could go to. And we were waiting for the rest of the world to catch up. So it's exciting. I love that, like, David, I'm in McDonald's. I'm getting my hair done. Everybody's talking about women's basketball, you know, and it's Angel Reese. Okay, I love that I'm on the train in D.C., on the metro. Everybody's talking about women's basketball. So I love that now what used to be small talk is common talk, and that we all watched it together as a family. I mean, literally everybody was hitting up my phone. Are you watching the game? Do you see what's happening? I mean, everybody was so excited. So for me, again, it's nice that it's here. Of course, I'm like, dang, why did it take so long? Right. But I'm glad we're at this moment, and I'm excited for the future of women's basketball. I feel like the baton is in good hands, and that finally people see the greatness that women, not only honestly, they've been achieving it, but now we're all watching it. And I think we all just see the excitement around the sport. So I'm excited, David.
Yeah. I think people need to remember this, how little time has passed in this country since Title IX. Ooh. The NCAA was founded in 1906. Mm-hmm. 1906. So we're talking 118 years men's sports.
Yeah.
Title IX doesn't come along until 1972. So we're 52 years, just older than me, slightly older than me. Yeah. We're talking about that. And in those 52 years, you're still talking about resistance by administrations, resistance by fan bases, resistance by television networks, resistance all along that way of saying there's no interest in this for the broader population. Right. But what we are seeing now is that if you give it to people, they actually might like it.
Build it and they will come. That's what we've seen, right, in women's basketball. I mean, and they're here. Not even they will come. They're here, David. I mean, we're already talking about it. I had a conversation yesterday. Kelsey, do you see this new Texas women's basketball class? They compete against Dawn Staley. I mean, we're already talking about the future of women's basketball. We all can't wait until Monday in the draft and to see what happens with that. And to continue here with ticket prices. If people hit me up more than ever. Kelsey, hey, can you get me into this Mystics game? Like, I'm loving, David, right now where women's basketball is. Like you said, when you think about it, we're not too far removed. I mean, it's wild to me. You know, I remember I met, you know, Brittany Griner when she was at Baylor, right? And of course, I mean, we know what has happened since. I had a chance to meet Ammeyer Drysdale. Of course, if you're women's basketball, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're talking about history. You know, I remember this is like 2013 in Phoenix, Arizona.
The first woman to compete in an NBA training camp. Like, women have been drafted before Ammeyer.
Look that woman up. That woman is, she has been standing on business, all right? I mean, like incredible. And, you know, I remember her story and just what she was struggling through. And again, not too far removed. And to see where we are now, but even honestly to see, you know, still the struggles that women athletes are facing. And there's still guys who are like, well, I'm not watching the women's game. And you look what Angel Reese is going through today, you know, just being a young college athlete growing up before our eyes. You know, it's still like we we've moved, David. And like you said, even Title IX, you know, I mean, we've seen what it's done, but we also still see, I mean, David, do you remember the COVID in the locker rooms, the women locker rooms during the championship? And we're like, where's the weights for the women's basketball team? This is COVID, right? Y'all, we're in 2024. COVID was 2020. Again, not too far removed. So you see like the needle has moved, but it still obviously needs to kind of go at a quicker pace. So I think really get equitable, fair treatment for women's athletes. I think what's happening now in women's basketball is exciting. But again, we know there's still work to do to make sure that women are getting a fair share at all these colleges and universities across the country.
And I think, you know, the definition of those two words, equal and equitable, are something that people do not understand and distinguish very well. There are certain things that require, under the law, equal treatment, that these women should be getting equal facilities under the law. And then there's also the equitable part. Like you said, some things are not scalable yet. It's not time for the women's Final Four to be in a dome. And quite frankly, if you ask me, I think basketball is better off not being in a dome. But that's just my opinion. But when you look at these things, the equitable part of it, equitable to get exposure on the same television networks that the men get, to get these opportunities to have a standalone night for your game. And they're still fighting for that, having to play on a Sunday afternoon where the men get Monday primetime. As you talk about the 8 games that were played with an uneven 3-point line. That does not happen to men's basketball.
Men's basketball, right? And it would have been more of an uproar if it happened, I think, to men's basketball.
Imagine if UConn had stepped on the court and the 3-point line was 8 inches shorter on one side of the
court. Dan Hurley might have lost it completely. Like, I mean, we wouldn't be here, David. Exactly right. That should have made people. But like you said, because we're still not at that point yet, where again, people, I think, have the same emotions that they have for men as they have for female athletes.
I also think one of the things that I've really been impressed by in this era for women athletes is women have understood NIL. And have taken advantage of it far better than men have.
I agree.
I've talked with athletic directors who say when they hold the meetings about NIL, the women always show up. The women are there understanding. And I think part of it, too, is the lack of opportunities for so many of them going forward is they have to take care of and acknowledge that this business is being done now, because those revenue streams may not be available to them in the future. So they are fully becoming well-rounded businesswomen at this age. Like when you see a Livy Dunn in gymnastics, which you would say the average person on the street has no idea who Livy Dunn is, but she's the most followed athlete in the country, male or female. Yes. Most of your top 10 NIL earners are women. It is an impressive thing that we're seeing in that regard.
You know, I think this is so exciting. And, you know, I think women have always, like you said, we always have to think forward more so. And, you know, I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. They're like, I don't think Angel Reese is so serious. I said, Angel Reese is very serious about her basketball career. But also Angel Reese is a businesswoman. She understands her brand and what she is. She understands marketing. I love her whole Bayou Barbie brand. You know, her team, shout out to Athlete Studios. I have a whole bunch of Unapologetically Me merchandise, you know, from that. Angel's team gets that, you know, I mean, she's literally an icon. I mean, literally, you know, what happened last year and the whole You Can't See Me, John Cena thing, David, that made conversation, right? I mean, you think about it, she understands beauty. Hello, announcing your WNBA draft movement in Vogue magazine. A lot of us grew up reading Vogue magazine, and I read Vogue for fashion more, so I never really thought the two would come together, right? Where I see my fashion and sports world collide. And so all that to say, you know, you talked about Livy. Like, I mean, that's another example. Olivia, you know, she understands, I mean, obviously a gymnast and athlete, but she has a whole marketing brand. And I actually really love Livy too, because her family knows part of that and controlling that money. And like you said, at NIL, I think, you know, Shedeur Sanders was talked about a bit, you know, on the men's side, and obviously, you know, what he did at Colorado with his father Dion, and all that makes sense. But, you know, the women, I think, have really seen, like, this is our opportunity. And especially when you think about how unfair college athletics have been to them for so long, I think this NIL phase, if done right, is really helping women to somewhat kind of level that playing field, you know, in a way, in terms of them being able to advertise or see, you know what, I see women's sports growing. I see this woman's social media following. And all of a sudden, I mean, you see everybody drawn to it, right? I mean, I have a lot of female athlete parents here in the DMV area reach out to me. I'm referring people to like lawyers and stuff, David, right? Like, you should probably talk to this person. Cause, you know, I mean, and advertisers, everybody sees it. Advertisers, hey, Kelsey, I mean, are there any athletes here that you think we should be looking at or investing in? I love this moment for women athletes. But like I said, I think it's a beautiful thing that they're able to take advantage. Like you said, I mean, to be honest with you, I played basketball, but David, I didn't see myself playing overseas, you know, and I knew I wanted to broadcast. So for me, it was like, you know what, I love the dream, but the dream is going to shift more towards my broadcast career. You know, now obviously there's more opportunities, like at the AU league here, right, that we have for basketball. Obviously overseas is always an option if that's something that you want to do. But now with the growth of WNBA, you talked about games earlier. Look at the national games. The Fever just tweeted out 90% more national games this season, David, than they've had. Like, this is an exciting time for women's basketball. But I think what's happening now, David, NIL is some high school students can capitalize on this in some states. Obviously, collegiately, we've seen, and honestly with women athletes now, not just, I mean, male and female, both, all of them are looking at schools now like, where I can just, I play, but where can I maximize my NIL dollar? Because I want to start building on this now. A lot of athletes are being approached by financial advisor companies like, look, we can start that generational wealth building now. We can start to close that, you know, that economic gap that maybe generations of your families have seen now in college. All this to say, I think this empowerment that's happening economically for females, David, it's so great to see. And I love the females that are capitalizing on it. And honestly, I think there's only more to come. Like, I think I saw Juju Watkins is about $500,000 right now. David, that's only going up. And by the way, my favorite commercial right now is her and Joel Embiid in a little bun thing. I think that's the cutest thing. But NIL right now for female athletes, if you're a marketer, I would be looking at female athlete teams because that's where people are interested in. That's where they're drawn to. And honestly, that's a way, I think, again, to have a mutually beneficial relationship with the college athlete, where also the marketer makes money.
I think women present an opportunity across multiple types of endorsements. I think guys are very narrow.
Yeah.
You know, guys are influenced, and I don't mean to be general about this, but I think it's been proven that women in most cases control the shopping dollar in a household. And also men tend to be narrowly focused on things.
Yeah.
Whereas women are looking, there's so many different layers for female athletes to get themselves ingrained into because they're open to those possibilities. Guys are much more, I think, especially on the high school and collegiate level, having coached and been a high school guy myself.
Yeah.
Guys are so much more inwardly focused at that point. I'm going to make the NBA. I'm right. going to go to the NFL. Whereas I think women do have to deal with the reality of it. And even if you're not making $500,000 a year, there's an understanding that if I'm a good player, yeah. and I do my job and I take advantage of these opportunities, I'm walking out of college with zero debt. Ooh. And I can buy a home. I can look for that job that I really need yep. or I really want because I'm not under the financial pressure. So it's not even just generational wealth. You're talking about immediate security right now, at 21, yes. 22 years old, yes. which is something that you and I had no concept of.
David, I am still waiting for President Biden to send this email with my loans canceled. I keep refreshing. I'm like, where's my email? I saw these people talking about it, you know? And I think you're so right. I mean, yes, like, you know, you probably worked a job in college. I worked a basic job in college, right, to get by. I was interning and stuff. But those possibilities weren't there. And again, it's beautiful to see because we know for far too long, athletes have been giving their time, talents, and treasures to these universities. Universities, you know, carrying the weight of these university athletic departments on their back and getting up, you get a scholarship and 3 meals a day or whatever it was, you know what I mean? But now it's like, no, I'm going to find a way to actually put money in my own pocket. And let's think about it. How many college stars have we seen go through the game and, you know, nothing kind of happens for them post college in terms of athletics, right? And so those, especially those people, like you said, they can start to build now that, you know, what for them, which is exciting. And I think about it. I mean, if you're able to do this when you're younger, I mean, David, there's so many pit holes. I'm sure me and you can share many stories of things we could do. We had the money to do it, right? If we were able to start making it like that in college. And so I'm excited it's here. And again, I love to see this them capitalizing off of it. But my biggest thing though, too, is just having the right people around you, right? Because I've also heard too many athletes that unfortunately have been taken advantage of. Because again, people say they got all this money and they're honestly depending on ignorance and non-education, right, of the financial world. So I think it's also that side of it where we have to make sure that these athletes are getting educated about the new money that's coming into them, because you don't know what you don't know. And if you've never had this money before, you know, this is a whole new world of possibilities opening to you, but you want to make sure that you're doing it the right way.
Yeah, that part of it is the educational part for parents, athletes, in selecting who is going to be your representative and what your ultimate goal is. Because I think the worry is that athletes can lose sight of their ultimate goals. I look at a player like a Haley Van Lith, who did transfer from Louisville to LSU, looking for a better opportunity, not just in NIL, but she wanted to win a championship. Right. They did not win a championship this year, but she's back in the portal because LSU's got the number two recruiting class in the country coming in. There's not a spot for her to get the kind of points that she needs if she wants to play overseas. And I think that for athletes, there's a danger. Make sure not only is the NIL right, but don't mess your opportunity up, because your career is still your career.
I mean, think about it. We were screaming Haley Van Lith's name at Louisville, right? I mean, it's like she was a dog. Like, what do you do with this girl? And, you know, at LSU, I think she had her contributions. But, right, we saw her numbers go down. And, you know, obviously Haley's not the biggest person in the world. And that does matter, right, when you're thinking about play on the next level. Because I think people forget the WNBA, it's small, right? You have 144 players. We're looking at 36 right in the draft. If you think about last year, I think about 15 of those 15 of the people drafted actually made opening day rosters. Again, make sure I say this, opening day rosters does not mean you were on the team later on that roster. So it's very competitive and very hard. And so to your point, like you said, you have to put yourself in the best position, right? And so obviously, you know, I know we talk about this a lot in the NBA, but, you know, does it make sense to be on a super team in college? You just have to see what's best for you. You know, I think Haley at Louisville was rocking it, you know, right now. And, you know, bless. And I hope she has strong mental health, because the memes and everything that was out there, David, after that game against Iowa, I mean, she got obliterated, probably in ways that she never has in her career, right? Because she's always been a very talented athlete. So all that to say, like you said, I hope, you know, wherever Haley decides to go, I really do hope it's a place where she can once again shine and remind people, this is HBL. Like, this is the girl, you know, that can ball and break ankles and get to the basket, but also has the, you know, beautiful shot from behind the perimeter. So, you know, like you said, but it's so important to make the right one and picking the right coach, right? Kim Mulkey is the right coach maybe for a lot of players that we've seen, right? But maybe for Haley, we didn't, you know, I think that honestly, I had questions the whole season, right? And sure enough, my questions are still there because I still wasn't understanding everything. You know, I think it was a humbling experience for Haley. You know, you could see her, you know, Kim Mulkey was not afraid to send her to that bench, and especially, you know, if she made a mistake or something. But I really do hope, again, Haley can go somewhere where I think she's a talented athlete. And again, I think where a coach can really use her strengths, but also, of course, build on some of the things she has challenges on, right? That defensive side of the basketball, again, I think that was a humbling experience for her. But it's so important, like you said, to focus on that athletic side. Yes, make money, but at the end of the day, I would love to go to school like UConn, for instance, if I was a man, you know, where I could maybe win a championship with Dan, but also, you know, be making some money at the same time, right? But again, I would be more worried about, you know, I'm thinking about what do when WNBA scouts right now are drafting, right? We have the draft coming up. Yes, it's great you have NIL money, but they care about who can contribute to this team right now, right? They're trying to win a championship right now, right? They're trying to keep their jobs right now. So that's based on you. And so that's why I'm saying, like you said, I think it's like, and I hope athletes don't lose sight of that. Yes, it's so nice to have the flashy things and the money and, you know, but at the end of the day, if you want to have that athletic career, just make sure that your athletic prowess is doing the right due diligence to research the right school and the right coach for you.
We have to talk about Dawn Staley.
Oh, the GOAT.
because at this stage, it seems as if, in totality, you take everything from high school to now, Dawn Staley is putting together the greatest resume in women's basketball history. She's all-American in high school, two-time national player at Virginia, and didn't win a championship, but gets two-time national player, and you can't name another person on that team, and she's going up against the Tennessee dynasties of that era, the early stages of UConn, those types of things. Yeah. Goes on, multiple gold medals in the Olympics. I think she has three gold medals, if I'm not mistaken, in the Olympics. That's unprecedented, you know, for the most part. as a player in the WNBA, an all-star with the Charlotte Sting. I remember watching that first year with the Sting because I was at Wake Forest at the time and seeing her then. And then turning Temple, which had been off the basketball map, into a place. Mm-hmm. Going to South Carolina, which had been off the basketball map, and creating unprecedented success. Yep. The amount of players she's turned into WNBA stars. And then this year, turning over an entire starting five and winning the national championship with still maybe your best two players sitting on the bench.
I mean, where do I start with Dawn Staley, David? I mean, you said it so eloquently. Like, I mean, this is a woman, you know, and I'm going to go religious like she has, as she should do, right? Because she should follow her faith always. Uncommon favor. Dawn Staley has been one who has honestly defied the odds, whether you looked at her size, whether you looked at her being a Black woman. I mean, it's been incredible to watch. You know, everybody wrote South Carolina off this year. Oh, they lost all their star players. There's no way. And then, oh, okay, they went undefeated in the regular season. It's going to end eventually. They're going to lose. And what do? They keep climbing and climbing and chirping and chirping, and they get to this title game. That title game did not start the way South Carolina wanted. You could see Don's face on that sideline, but what did they do? They bounce back. And especially, I think the way this team has been able to close out games, right? It's like in the NBA, right? Doc Rivers, when he's over teams, they have trouble closing out games, right? With Dawn Staley, this is a second half team, David. I'm not even worried about sometimes how they do in the first, because I know whatever she says in that locker room is going to pipe them girls up. And they're going to come out even stronger. And so the fact that, one, she's done this, again, think about the Black coaches that we know in college basketball. She's already
Ian Stringer, Carolyn Peck,
She's on a mountaintop. You know, you think about it, like the 10th team to go undefeated, right? First Black coach to do so. I mean, Dawn has defied odds, not just as a Black person, not just as a Black woman. She's done this as a coach. Just a coach in general, a basketball head coach. And I think it's so beautiful. And I think what's so beautiful, Dawn, is that she's done it her way. You know, she's done it her way, her style. You can really tell that her players love her. And she's built a dynasty. I am ready to call South Carolina a dynasty. I mean, and they are. They're just that. I mean, if I'm looking into this basketball season, how do we beat South Carolina? How do we build and retool? You know, and really this is on both sides of basketball, right? What UConn was able to do and what South Carolina was able to do. Like both these teams, again, we didn't think they could do it. There's no way they both were able to find the pieces. And I think what Dawn Staley has done is like, you have to respect her. And the crazy thing, David, is we're not done with Dawn Staley. Like, I mean, her resume, me and you talk on the show in a year. I mean, it's probably going to need like 10 minutes just to list out everything Dawn Staley has done. I mean, it's incredible. Like just what, you know, again, she's able to obviously recruit. And I also love that she shouted out Winston, you know, in her post-game interview. I thought that was so classy. You know, she shouted out
Caitlin. Scouting, yes.
Shouted out the scout. Shouted out Caitlin. Shout out your competitor who you know everybody's talking about. Like, I mean, she just does it in the classiest, you know, classiest way. Protecting her players. You know, she's not afraid. I'll not forget the press conference, you know, when I think it was Carmelo Cardoso, you know, when people who were calling her things they shouldn't have been describing her as. Dawn took that. This is on her. Like she protects her players in ways that like, you know, we just haven't seen. So the fact that, like I said, she does all of this and somehow still remains cool, you know, be dancing and stuff at the, you know, I mean, it's like
Dawn. She's still North Philly.
She's one of, look, all the time. Like she's just one of them ones, David. You know what I mean by that? Like Dawn is, she has done what everybody said that she couldn't. And it's been beautiful to watch and to witness. I feel blessed and privileged, David, to watch what Dawn Staley has built. Like you said, no one was checking for South Carolina pre-Dawn Staley. We weren't worried about it. My cousin played volleyball at South Carolina. The volleyball team was who they used to talk about at South Carolina. They weren't talking about the basketball team there. But all of a sudden now we have to pay respect. I mean, what about, David, there's a statue outside of South Carolina women's basketball, right? And you know the player I'm talking about because she's in the WNBA now. But that's been beautiful. That was a player that Dawn Staley coached. I mean, they've paid respect to women's basketball at South Carolina. And Dawn Staley has been the engine of that. She's been the automotive of that. I mean, she has really pioneered something in ways that we've never seen. So, you know, I know we talked about a lot about Tara this week. And, you know, again, another great coach. And, of course, Gino's going to always be up there. But Dawn's name is up there, David, again, with what she's been able to pioneer at South Carolina, making this, a perennial pioneer powerhouse that players want to play for and players want to go to.
I want to draw a parallel for you, and because you live in the DMV.
All right.
Vaughn, in some ways, reminds me of what John Thompson did at Georgetown.
Yes.
Though Dawn is more successful as far as championships.
Yeah.
But Dawn, as all the things you mentioned, the way she deals with her players in protecting them. You know, John Thompson went through the things with Patrick Ewing being called an ape and being called illiterate and pulling his team off the floor for taunts and fighting for against proposition, you know, prop 28 to so that freshmen would be ineligible and, you know, feeling it on unfairly targeted black players.
Yep.
Dawn has been in the fray, whether we're talking about transgender athletes, we're talking about women, we're talking about all these things. Dawn is not afraid to step into the battle.
Not at all.
And the thing that I think that separates her from Coach Thompson, who I have immense respect for.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that separates Dawn is that John Thompson was unapologetically about making sure John Thompson got over. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, John Thompson will tell you, I'm going to make my money and do these things.
Yeah.
There seems to be a genuine, and I don't like calling coaches fathers and mother figures. I don't like doing that because there are so many players who do have great parents. But there is a genuine care that does come across that Dawn is concerned about you for more than what you produce on the basketball court for her. And you see the players who have left her program who still have these relationships with her and come back, and there's these tearful, you're like, Asia Wilson just gone that long. But when she meets up with Dawn, they're crying.
Because that bond.
Because of what they've been through. And it's an amazing thing to watch.
That bond, you know, I love that you did the John Thompson parallel. Because right now in DC, we're 1984 championship, right? It's 2024. So there's a lot of conversation about that championship team and Coach Thompson. But all that to say, you know, right, Big John, and I had a chance to work for the athletic department when he was still part of that Georgetown athletic department. So this is near and dear to my heart, David, this conversation. All this to say, John Thompson and what he did for black male athletes, especially at that time. Remember, this is, we're talking about championship 84, obviously the 80s, much different America, right? In the 80s, again, we talked about OJ, much different America in the 90s, David. So all that to say, you know, what he was doing, like you said, unapologetically, it mattered and it was huge. And what Dawn Staley did, I think the question from OutKick about the transgender athletes, and everybody's like, why did she answer? Dawn Staley understands what being a leader is. A leader does not shy away, right? You answer the tough questions. And Dawn Staley understands her role in this. To shy away, what message does that send to other athletes, right, that are out there that, you know, she wouldn't be being true to herself, you know? And I love that she did that, David, because it does matter. Yes, you know, was that the right time to ask that question? You know, we could go on off and on about that. But it was asked, and she answered. And I do think that matters. And I think Dawn Staley, like you said, I mean, the way that she looks out for her athletes and at a time when black women continually go under attack. I mean, there's a reason why Malcolm X said, you know, when he was alive, may he rest in peace. The most unprotected woman in America is the black woman. And I still think that holds true today, David. Dawn Staley understands what her team has amassed. Sometimes the negative, unfair attention that they get, you know, she has called it out in media. And I know as a player that matters to them, right? They have somebody that's looking over their back, right? They have somebody that's saying, you know what? This is more than basketball. And Dawn has said that, right? These are grown women that I'm coaching. They're human beings like everybody else. And I think that matters. So all that to say, I love that parallel, right? They are different in ways, but I think we see both of them unafraid of what everybody else thinks. And they're going to go to bats at all time for their players on that basketball team. So I love that parallel. You know, I wish Big John was alive to see what Dawn Staley, you know, has accomplished. That'd be a question I know, I would love to hear his answer.
If he and John Chaney were both here to see this, I wish Nolan Richardson were around to talk to them too. Like those three men, you know, the stuff that they had to go through and what they did, you know, to fight, you know, Thompson being the first black coach to win an NCAA championship.
I have to say this as a Georgetown grad and should have had another one.
Should have had three.
Look, don't get me in my emotions and feelings. Yes.
Don't get me in mine. I'm like Patrick Ewing is on my wall. Okay, Hoya paranoia is what made me a Knicks fan because I followed Patrick Ewing wherever he went. So 82 still stings, and 84 still stings. And I've been thinking about that, that Villanova.
It hurts.
And 85, that Villanova was still like, just, okay. And I saw Ed Pinckney at a game because, you know, of course, he still works in the NBA. And I said, I hate you for that. I said, I still hate you for that. You're a great guy. You're a nice guy. But I hate you for that game. And he's like, I get it.
He's probably
a lot of people hate me. And I was like, the negatives, though, and this is my concern as somebody who watches the discourse, there are two things that really have stood out to me. Number one, I've never had a problem with NBA players going to WNBA games and supporting women's basketball. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant in particular, to me, set the example. Like, he didn't make it about Kobe. You know what I mean? He just went to games.
Yeah.
He wore a WNBA sweatshirt, you know, and he's Kobe Bryant. He's going to stand out no matter what. But he went genuinely as a fan.
Yeah.
And wasn't new to this.
Right.
You know, had been there for years and developing women's basketball on his own for not only his daughter, but for other kids as well with the Mamba Academy. Women's basketball was a very important part of his life. But now I think the media, what they do when they go into a locker room after an NBA game and you ask these players, you ask LeBron a question, why is women's basketball so popular? And he says, well, they have icons. Hmm. And as you said earlier, women's basketball has always had icons.
Always
had icons. Whether we go back to the Ann Myers or we're talking about Cheryl Miller, Lisa Leslie, Nikki Holdsclaw, Breonna Stewart, Diana Taurasi, Cheryl Swoops, whoever you want to bring up.
Lynette Woodard, since her name
Lynette is Woodard. Yes, I mean, come on. You know, Tina Pinheiro, who was one of the flashy, was Jay Williams, you know, White Chocolate. She was doing that stuff when she was at Old Dominion.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've seen icons on the women's game. And I think that there are a lot of men who are just coming into it. And so they're like, wow, the women's game has stars. It's always had stars. I think we need to continue to promote the fact that the game has been good. It's just getting better.
I think what you're saying is exactly what the WNBA players are trying to say. It's no shade or hate towards Caitlin. They're saying, yes, Caitlin is great, but also there have been other greats. And that is okay to say. Like, I think that's what the point is. Like, women's basketball, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, we're both old enough and alive to remember when the WNBA first started. This is a new league, folks. I mean, it's still, when you think about it compared to other sports league, really still in its infancy when you think about it. So all that to say, like you said, I mean, there's so many players. Like, for me, I loved growing up watching Elena Beard and Coco Miller on the Mystics. I mean, they were my favorite players, right? But I think people forget, and again, I went to Maryland, you know, so I remember, you know, the championship for women's basketball, Brenda Freeze had built, you know, and seeing those players. For instance, Christy Winterscott, who broadcasts here in the D.C. area, you know, so all that to say, I think sometimes the men, I think they're just trying to say maybe what's right, David, to be fair, right? And then their minds are just hearing, you know, what they hear on TV. But to your point, I think that was what separated Kobe, because he got it, David. Like he, like you said, he was a lover of basketball. And if you're a lover of basketball, you don't care who's playing, right? I don't care what gender they identify as. I just love their game. I love basketball, right? Basketball is my love language. It talks to me. And that's what I want to watch. And so I think you're right in that. And I do think some of them try to be sincere, but it comes out wrong. But to me, you know, I really would love, you know, that guy that's, you know, able to, you know, one of the things that was so fun when Kelsey Plum was at Washington was when Markelle Fultz was there too. And we were talking about how both of them, right? And they used, I don't remember this, but they used to do press conferences and they would always allude to the other's game. And I just thought that was a beautiful thing to see, you know, at that time, you know, how, and obviously both of them have went on to the pros now. But I mean, I think to your point, you know, I think reporters are trying to get that soundbite, but sometimes maybe it's not approached right. Like, was it, who was the one that said the crazy stuff about women's basketball? Was it Michael Porter Jr.? If I remember right, do you remember the podcast?
Yes. Talking?
It was Michael Porter Jr. You know, I thought about how far that set us back. And he's somebody who had been close to women's basketball, like right in the family, and still didn't get it, David, and felt comfortable enough, right, to have those comments. I mean, but all of that to say, like, I think it's up to women to, not just women, I think it's up to all of us to make sure. That's why I love that me and you do the show. Now, me and you are a lover of sports, right? And so we love those stories being told. I think it's up to all of us to, again, make sure that we're educated on folks. Like I told people, Lynette Woodard isn't salty, but she's making sure, like, she fought for that. She you know, that record. So she, damn right, David, she better tell people like, this is what I did. As anybody should, if any of us have a record, look, some of us go back to the playground. If you held that record, you're going to be very proud of it. Right. And you're going to make sure that it's told right. And I think it's very important to make sure that we control the narrative. And so I think that's what people are saying. I think Caitlin Clark is such an important part of the story, but there's an and next to Caitlin Clark's name because there's so many. I mean, how lucky were we to watch this women's basketball year? Especially, I mean, the freshmen have made me the most excited that we're going to get more than like Tessa Johnson. I can talk about all day, David, like what she was able to do and to step up. I mean, I already talked about Juju. Like, I mean, it's incredible, right? Like that this
more
is
coming.
And that's and what's crazy. If you look at the upcoming class, like we're spoiled. We are spoiled, folks, for what we have, the talent and greatness that we've seen. So all I want to say, I really hope to your point that men are really like watching these games. I know this year obviously was an anomaly where we saw more. We're really just watching women's basketball because they love the game, you know, and really can, you know, talk to the great players of the game, those that are here presently, but also those who came before. Because let me tell you, you cannot know our history lies in our past lies in our future. You cannot move forward without knowing those who came before. So it's very, very important that we remember all those trailblazers, those pioneers who paved the way for us to talk about all the great players of today. So I love that you said that. And I don't think they do it, David, really in a harmful way, but it comes out and I get exactly what you're saying, where it comes out and it just doesn't seem genuine because it's like, well, wait, where you been? Like this has been going on. Like come to the party. It's been happening for a while. You're a little bit late, but I would rather them at least come sometime than at no time.
Yeah, it's just, I think that the voices are so large because like when you have a Shaquille O'Neal saying Angel Reese is the best player in LSU history. And again, I think Angel is a phenomenal player.
Right.
But I saw Simone Augustus. Mm. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? Like I saw Simone Augustus, who's going into the Hall of Fame right now. I saw Julia Fowles, who may be the greatest defensive player in the history of the WNBA.
But you know, that's just a recent...
But my thing is not the selective memory. It's that you weren't aware. Mm. I don't think Shaq watched Simone Augustus. And I'm not saying that to disparage him. He was in the middle of his NBA career. Right. When was he going to have time to sit down and watch those games? But now that he has time, and that's what I think a lot of it is that since COVID, when we all had time, and the women's game, that's when we really started to see the ratings jump. Because A, there wasn't a lot on, but also the people who were new to the game were seeing it's not an either or.
Right.
It's not an either or. Comparison is the thief of joy. Mm. Women's basketball can be women's basketball. Men's basketball can be men's basketball. And they don't have to be the same for you to enjoy them both.
Right.
You
enjoy it for different reasons.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe you just love basketball and maybe the men's is the same to you as a woman. But, you know, I think this conversation is important because it takes me back. Remember when Kenny Smith had that comment when they did the Steph Curry versus Sabrina Ionescu competition during NBA All-Star. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what he said, but remember it was something like they should have moved the ball up for her or something like that. And it was just like, Kenny.
Kenny. Shooting is shooting.
Like, you know better. Yes, shoot or shoot. And Sabrina Ionescu specifically wanted, she has shot from that. The same praise that folks are giving Caitlin right now from, you know, just, and sometimes Caitlin's just nasty with it sometimes. I mean, she like, her defenders just like, pray for them, right? But that's Sabrina Ionescu. She can shoot that thing, David. Like, she can shoot from many places. So it's like, no, the ball doesn't need to be moved forward. Sabrina can shoot like Steph. All that to say, like you said, I mean, Steph is obviously great in the NBA game. Sabrina Ionescu has been great in the WNBA game. But at that moment, it was beautiful to see those two worlds collide. But it's like, I hate when people say, I'm just saying, ignorant comments that set us back, David, just way too far for what these women have fought for, again, just for literally decent respect of the game. But all that to say, you know, it's exciting for me to be in a time now where I see ticket sales going up. I see ticket prices are high. You know, I get the access, David, to national games, you know, facts that folks don't just have to have WNBA league pass. The fact that you can cut on your basic cable, maybe with that fancy sports package, you know, and cut the game on. That matters. That matters.
And so it does.
I think it's exciting. And I think that exposure, though, to your point, I hope it does help to educate people where this becomes a norm to talk about women's basketball and not just a luxury when it's hot all of a sudden.
Yeah, because, if we talk about great individuals, I mean, Elena Deladon.
Ooh, and Elena like, been nasty, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Went to Delaware and made Delaware relevant by herself.
And who talks about Delaware? What's the saying about Delaware, the square from Delaware? Y'all weren't talking about Delaware. Like, come on now.
You passed through Delaware. You don't stop in Delaware.
Maybe you pass stop through the gas Delaware. Station, but that's all. Like, you care nothing else.
Nope.
I live close to Delaware, and I can count the times I've been to Delaware.
So I think it's just, you know, I hope that there's the opportunity. And that's what I'd love to see outcome of this is not just the opportunity for the current players, but again, to get a greater appreciation of the history of this game. Yes. And that is a struggle in general right now in sports, is everything is what happened last week or to what happened last night. And we are losing some perspective.
I think, and that's why, Dave, I think this is how me and you connected, because we are historians of the game. We actually appreciate the game, right? And I think, you know, it's just, and when you've seen the history, you can do better, right? Like, for instance, the HBCUs that played in that tournament, that meant something, because you think about it, I think it was like only 16 before, David. Like, it's wild when you think about that number. But, you know, to me, for instance, you know, when Grambling played Purdue, I saw Zach Edey get exposed that first half. Because that first half, David, that game was actually a lot closer than many people could ever think. You know, and of course, Zach Edey had the size on Grambling. But I was like, he's, you know, when he loves to dribble that basketball and back you back. And that's when he can be exposed, right? He makes mistakes. So all that to say, like you said, though, but I also had seen Grambling, you know, do this beforehand. So all that to say, like, I think folks have to remember, like, yes, we want you to come into the game. We do. We want you to come into the game. We can't have too many fans. But at the same time, it's like, if you do say you love sports and, you know, you want to be that, you do need to be, again, a historian for anything that you do. Whatever you do in life, you better know who came before you and how they did it, right? If you want to, again, think about the future of that. So I think that's what you're saying, David. It is important and it matters. And again, because, again, like you said, Title IX is only, we're only so far removed. And we think about, you know, the next, let's say 25 years, you know, of women's basketball. And we're all going to remember, you know, this time when we saw all of us help to witness the most ever watched college basketball game, right? And that means something. But again, there was a time before time. Think about the first time women's basketball was ever broadcast, right? I mean, there's so many things that you can think about. So all that to say, I agree with you. And this is why I love sports, though, because there's always so much history, David, that happens within sports, right? I mean, think about it. Like, we were literally, again, and may he rest in peace, we're just talking about OJ, but a large part of OJ's story was the sports part, right? And him playing the Heisman at USC, right? And what it meant to be a black man in the 70s doing what he was doing. And, like, I mean, there's just so many different, you know, parallels and just different things that happen in sports, but they make us have conversations. And I'm glad that we have those conversations. So I'm excited for, again, women's sports. And just to kind of continue to cover these storylines there. Next year is going to be fun.
The last couple of questions I want to ask you. Number one, we talked about the WNBA and just how many players are not making it because just simply the numbers game. They've added a 13th team, but I really think 16 is where they could get to, considering the amount of players that exist and are available in the talent pool. And I mean, we're seeing first round picks that can't make their opening day rosters, as you said, players who are highly qualified, but they just aren't the numbers. And I there's another part to this that I want to ask your opinion as well. I think it's time for the WNBA to break away from the NBA. Because
completely.
I say that.
Okay.
Because I think the women's game lends itself more to owners who want to own women's basketball teams, whereas men's basketball owners tend to be corporations who view it as an asset.
Right.
We are still in the early stages, as you said. The first 25 years of the NFL, the NBA, those were home mom and pop owned teams because they were willing to do all the work to make sure it stayed successful. When you're a subsidiary of a company like the NBA, you are tied to them for better or for worse. Yeah. You rely on their attention for better or for worse and their co-signment for better or for worse. And I think that, you know, we have reached a point 25 years in where the women on their own, the game itself can stand on its own. Mm-hmm. The arenas are there. We're seeing more women specific arenas in certain cities, you know, where the teams are playing. And I think that there are more ownership groups, quite frankly, who are owned by men and women who would like to get involved and would love an opportunity and on a lower scale, because you don't have to be a billionaire to buy a WNBA team. On a lower scale, you can be profitable with television, gate receipts, et cetera. Yeah. And the fact that WNBA players are also more likely to be in their communities like they used to be in the NBA and NFL and Major League Baseball. I think that this is that time for some independence and some growth. Not to insult the NBA in any way, but the NBA has its own mission. And I think there's a unique mission. We just got a commissioner in the WNBA 2 years ago. Their own independent commissioner has only been around for 2 years. So I think there is some more of that separation. There's good that comes with being with the NBA, of course. Yeah. But I think for ultimate growth, at some point, you got to stretch your own legs.
Yeah, this is an interesting conversation. And so, yes, we know the WNBA needs expansion. I mean, if you're a growing, healthy league, you want more roster spots. I mean, when you think about it, the WNBA is probably the most competitive to get in. I mean, we're about to do the NFL draft. Most of y'all don't watch all the rounds of the NFL draft. You know, there's a reason why you haven't missed Mr. Irrelevant. And, you know, even the NBA draft. So all that to say, I think the WNBA, you know, the part about pulling away from the NBA, for me, David, I would say I don't think the time is right now. I like to see, like, right now I'm thinking about some of the teams that, you know, are holding on. So meaning, you know, again, right now we're at an exciting time. But, you know, we've seen the ups and downs of the WNBA, right? Like you said, we've seen teams come and go, right, quite frankly. So all that to say, like, I, you know, if you know about ownership and investment, you know, I think right now, again, it's about just making sure you have solid finances, right? So before I even think about them pulling away, I would love to see more teams, and I would love to see us be able to pay the players more. Once that like financial backing is secure, maybe you do think about other options. Now, what's interesting, I was just in a conversation. What we're seeing right now a lot in sports is that Qatar, Saudi Arabia, some of these Middle Eastern countries who obviously have lots of money, right? Gas and other things are actually interested in investing in sports. Now, here where I am in DC, I don't know if many folks know this, and I'm not saying this is going to be a viable option, but Qatar had actually purchased a 5% stake in Monumental Sports and Entertainment. Now, Monumental Sports and Entertainment is the Wizards, second to worst team in the NBA, the Mystics, and the Capitals, right? So you think about all of that. But I think the ownership part that you said does matter. Now, pre-Ted Leonsis, there was a guy, Abe Pollin, who was beloved in the community. And David, he was a lover of sports. Loved the Mystics, loved the Wizards, right? I mean, like, loved the sports. And I think he's much different than Ted Leonsis. And I'm not saying Ted Leonsis does not love the sports. But I do think Ted Leonsis is a businessman. So to your point, you know, I do think you have owners, right, that are in it. They're like, oh, you know, this is a good investment, right? And that's how they're looking at it, where they're not really just like, I just love this, you know, and what can I do to
help? I love women's basketball. How do I grow women's basketball?
And of course, you know, we don't get to pick our owners because most of us will never make that much money to even be in a conversation about that. So to your point, you know, I see what you're saying, and yes, you would love that, but I think that's kind of what's unfair about sports. Kind of like you could say the best owners are probably people in the street right now, but they'd never have the capital to do that, right? They'd never have the capital to even, like, you know, set foot in an ownership room. Now to your point, yes, I mean, the money a lot comes from television talk. Right. I mean, you get those advertisers, you get the sponsors, you know, money talks. Because if you have if your games are shown on the right networks and the money you're getting, you could care less sometimes about gate sales. Now, of course, gate sales and tickets do matter, but that's a smaller piece of the pie, that television rights. That's why if you ever start a league, you need to get on TV. You need to have eyeballs on it because that's where a lot of the money made. The sponsorship. So WNBA, we saw more sponsors last year. And again, I think this year we're going to see more sponsors, David. And you want to have a wide variety of sponsors. And investment. You want people to be investing. So all this to say, like, I hear you, but I just don't think the time is now for them to do that. I do think there is a benefit to the NBA backing because, again, like, especially now, I think you see a lot more ownership groups. They're trying to brand as, like, they're trying to, like, be, I was just in New York, in Brooklyn, BSE Global, right? So you have the Liberty, you have the Nets. Everyone's trying to do these brands now, David, where they really are, I think, trying to put all the different teams under and not for just folks to know them as, oh, that's the Clippers owner. Oh, that's the Nets owner. No, they want you to know these whole corporations that have all the teams under it. So I do think that's trending in the right direction, but I hear you. I just think it's going to be hard to make happen because what I don't want to happen. So I used to work for the Arena Football League. That league is now defunct. Again, you think about money.
Yes, it is.
Money talks, money matters. We see a new UFL, what happened before with the USFL and the XFL. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, I just don't want that to happen to the WNBA. And I think those leagues prematurely tried to make financial decisions that they weren't in the right booth to do or right spot to do. So I don't think, I think me and you have this conversation maybe 20 years from now, when again, the WNBA is a little bit older, has more financial backing. And again, all these college players that we're seeing are helping just to, again, elevate the current brand that we see in the WNBA.
Lastly, it's still that women's sports comprise roughly around 10% of all sports coverage. How do we address that? Again, we talk about equitable It's never going to be 50-50. We get that. But yeah. Equitable coverage and reasonable coverage across mediums, how do we get to that point? And I know that's an impossible question for you to answer.
But you know what, David, this is it. Like, okay, so I freelance for a lot of different companies. And essentially when I'm on to talk about women's basketball, it's when you all talk about it, when it's trending on social media, when we just can't get enough of it. So I do think there's power. Like all of us have these phones in our hand. What was so beautiful about the game is that we really do watch it as a family. We're tweeting it together. We're using the hashtags together. So I think how do we get to that point is that we have to start talking about it and you know, get it out the barbershop, you know, put it on your Facebook page or whatever. I think that, I mean, media goes. So right now we see media going through an interesting time where unfortunately you see media declining in terms of the number of people. Unfortunately, you see layoffs, but we also still see a continued growth in sports startups, sports media startups, and honestly, just media companies. These media companies are starting based off what they're seeing to trend and where they can get advertiser dollars. Those advertiser dollars, they literally pay people to see what's trending. What are people talking about? What do people want? So I think it starts with just us making sure that we continue to have those conversations, David. That's why I think it is simple. But then also like, hey, if you want to see something, let me tell you, every phone company has a contact us line that you can call up and say, hey, I pay this much for this package. I'm not getting XYZ. I just had to do this the other day. I'm like, I have a sports package, Verizon. Why do I have NBA TV? So, you know, we fixed that, David. But all that to say, I mean, you can do that, right? And it matters. Like, you have to start to demand what you pay for. So, you know, if you're like WNBA League Pass, people used to complain about that. Well, what happened this year, David? We have more national games. I would like to think that we had a part in that. Your viewership, your tweets, your social media interaction. I mean, people were watching this. So I do think, you know, don't just say you love something. Actions always will speak louder than words. And again, there's people watching. Advertisers could care less about, you know, it's always been this way for men. If women is where the money are, that's where they're going because everybody wants to make more money at the end of the day. So I think that's up to us to be able to dictate that. So that's why I think it's beautiful. And again, so don't stop talking about women's basketball now that the Final Four is done, now that the championship is done. Keep having these conversations. Keep making them talk about it. Your media professionals, don't be afraid to at David Grubb or at your real K Nelson and tell us, hey, we'd love for you to talk more about this on your show. Like we have to listen to you all because essentially you all are what support us. So I do think there's power in the people still. And that we just have to reignite that passion and put it again to make sure that everybody is responsible to the public. A lot of these companies are for the public good and public service. Make them responsible to you.
I know I kept you longer than we planned.
No, I don't mind.
It was such a great conversation, and I love having these with you. And we'll definitely have to do it again because there's no way we can get all this done in this amount of time.
And I'll be in New Orleans this summer, David, so I'll have to see you.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll have to do one together live, do a live show together and talk some more women's hoops because we'll be in the swing of the WNBA season at that point. But exciting. I just want to thank you again and congratulate you on all the success that you're having. You have been a friend since day one and a great colleague as well. And we have had the opportunity to work together and we have the opportunity to support each other individually. Yeah. And I will continue to be glad to call you my friend in this industry and in life.
Thank you so much. Hello to all my New Orleans friends. Let me tell you, New Orleans supports me in a way that like I could not dream of. So I always have a special love for you, for New Orleans, and again, just good people. There are good people in the world. David is one of those. I feel like when we met, it was just boom, ding, bam, boom. Like I knew I was in good hands. He knew he was in good hands. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So thank you for continuing to support me and my journey. I know I'm always rooting for you, David, and just so proud. I always love the pictures of your daughter too on my timeline. Keep posting those.
That should be 16 next month. I can't believe it.
Time flies. Proud pops right here, folks.
Yes, I am. I am 100% a happy girl dad, and I love sharing sports with her. And she's not a player as much as she used to be, but she loves to watch basketball in particular. So I can take her to some games every now and then.
I'm a daddy's girl, so you know this speaks my language, Dave. And those moments matter. I mean, she might not even realize it now, but she'll look back. And those are such special moments, you know.
Oh, we're a gang. We're a two-man gang. So we roll hard, you know,
me and my band. Watch out, New Orleans. Look, the Grubs are coming through.
Please tell everybody how they can keep up with you and all the things that you do, because there are so many.
Easiest way is my website, just KelseyNicoleNelson.com. Follow me on social media, The Real K Nelson, Facebook, LinkedIn, Kelsey Nicole Nelson. I love doing the sports journey with you all and some of the other kind of cool things I get to do. And David, you're going to have to be a guest speaker in my brand new sports media class next year at GW. So,
you know, anytime you need me, I'll show up.
Thanks, guys. This was phenomenal, David. Thanks so much.
On behalf of Kelsey Nicole Nelson, I am, of course, am David Grubb, and this has been another edition of Hard to Paint.
Bye, guys.